Hello, welcome to Live in the Backyard Comedy Club podcast. We're sat here in the club straight after a really long show, really long in a good way, absolutely rocking show. We're here, me, David Whitney, co-host Chris Anastasi.
Hello. I was trying to say silent, but I felt like you were about to say belting night, but I feel you resisted that sort of very, you know, London boy is belting night.
But you'd see that as a London reference, belting.
Very, very sweet boy.
Because as somebody that's pretty much lived all my life in London but isn't from London, I do find what is considered a London thing. I just think of it as a thing.
Yeah, well,
if you've only been in one place,
yeah,
you don't think of it as that place's thing. You just think of it as the
thing.
Doesn't everybody eat eels?
That's the thing.
With their elbows out.
Eels with the elbows out. Well, you were shipped here, weren't you? Like the bubonic plague, or
did you say
know,
I was shipped
here? Bananas. Yeah, you were shipped here. So it's been a good night, right?
Yes. We're here with tonight's compere, Mike Shepherd. How are you, Mike?
Hey, gang. Thanks, David. I'm glad you finally introduced me. Yeah. I promised you that I'd be a professional and not speak until I was introduced.
You stood in that corner very well.
I was steaming.
I don't know why you faced the corner until I said your name. Some sort of Blair Witch project. Mm.
I didn't give him the dunce hat. Was that... Or was that yours, Mike?
It's a new character thing that I've brought.
BYO dunce.
I think it's better to lower expectations in the audience. Because as David mentioned, it was a marathon of a show today.
Yeah.
And in a way, and passive-aggressively, you were blaming that on me, because I was the compere tonight.
No, I wasn't. Not in a single way. It was completely my fault.
Because
I kept on putting acts on that weren't meant to be on. That's completely my fault.
No, I mean, that's good. I mean, I think that there is no better training for a stand-up. I mean, comparing is the best training you can get as a stand-up. And there is no better training for a compere than people just randomly throwing new names into your hat. Going, like, you thought that was the running order, prick? No, here you go.
Like a juggler asking for things from the audience.
Here's a tray. Do you remember what was on the tray? There's a grandfather clock, a picture of your own parents.
What was the name of the young ginger lad who we moved twice?
Cuddly toy?
Jake Farrell.
He was really good, really good. And he was good enough to... move around the bill.
Both
a top
great,
person and a
great
top comedian.
For anyone on the circuit to learn.
Yeah.
A, be awesome on stage. Be tolerant of promoters and compares bullshit. Sorry, mate. We did tell you you were definitely going to be on at the end of this section. Now you're definitely on at the beginning of the next section. And that is definite. That is now a compare promise. Sealed MC promise I've made to you.
I felt a little bit like an American football coach because
Is he institutionally racist?
No. My favourite coach is of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who happens to not be white. So there.
I'm a Minnesota bigots man, my friend.
Chris plays for the Weybridge Wydons.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't even go. I'm not allowed to comment on these things.
What do you mean you're not allowed to comment?
Anything whenever anyone says to me, it's like, you appear like a racist. It's like, well, I look like a...
The Weybridge Wydons.
The Weybridge Wydons.
They're racist.
Yeah, it is.
I thought it was an aroused... Never mind. Yeah, a woman's vagina that is...
Wait, is that where Wydon comes from?
Wydon is a female.
I assume Wydon was like what a man would refer to his penis as. Why a lot of people walk away.
It's hard on for a penis.
I say people, it might be because they're in the street. Wydon coming.
Widening is a thing with the male, but it's the...
A Wydon is
the engorgement is what you're known
for. This is so...
This is like something from the things.
This is so worrying territory.
Wait, so a Wydon is... thing.
Yeah, it's a joke. It's a joke on the word hard on because women can't say hard on. In fact, I've heard female comedians refer to their arousal.
But a woman has never actually said,
they don't actually...
Oh, I've got a wide on.
No, it's a joke. But it's a joke on the word hard on.
But it'd be interesting to hear that in real life.
Well, you date northerners, so you're probably most likely to hear it.
Yeah, but
usually... I don't mind having
northern guys
complaining that I said a northern joke. It's sexism I'm trying to stay away from.
The northerners. The scattergun of prejudice here will somehow stop people focusing in. Is this the same way that people are trying to avoid kind of like accusation of copyright theft on YouTube? So you're like, if we just throw too much at them, they'll never catch us.
Yeah, I was thinking more like the Donald Trump thing, where it's like, if I throw enough ridiculous shit at the crowd, no one will actually realise what's going on or what to be annoyed at. So you're just annoyed at everything.
You're racist and you sexually assault people. The moon landings were fake!
Yeah, there we go. That's
that's diplomacy now.
Moon landings were filmed on the top of the World Trade Center as it fell. Good.
The World Trade Center was
Have we left it? No, it was an illusion, a hologram.
How do you feel about that conspiracy, that it was actually Kubrick who filmed
flew into the World Trade Center
because he had enough of didn't that like underbeard.
There's different things. People say that Kubrick filmed the moon landings, but I can actually watch the moon landing footage all the way through.
I am a huge Kubrick fan. No, I will not have this.
That's fine.
But to be fair, if he'd done it, there would have been ledger to go along with it that would actually explain the story of the
moon
landing.
Barry Lyndon is an amazing film.
It's the only one I haven't seen.
You're a fucking idiot, David. and you pretend to have an interest in 18th century literature.
It's the only Kubrick movie I've not seen. Oh. I was really excited because the BFI did a re-release for it and for
Barry Lyndon.
But yeah, but I couldn't find a screening for Love Nor Money. There we go.
The most white middle-class thing you've ever said.
I watched it with my parents at home when I was a kid, and it was one of those sort of evenings when like people were just flicking between the four available TV channels looking for. I think so. My dad might have said something like innocuous, like, "Oh, I wonder if there's a film on," and it was Barry Lyndon. You're like, "Oh, well, this might be good." Yeah. 4.5 hours later, I am like inches away from a screen watching this incomprehensible narrative of 18th century debauchery and duplicity. I loved it, and it was all authentically lit as well.
And what age were you then?
I hate inauthentic lighting.
9.
You're about 9. So so obviously this is a podcast about you, Mike, so that was your sexual awakening then.
Yeah.
That was Barry Lyndon. I was an inch and a half away from the screen. Well,
it was The Shining.
I was quite young, because I was like, Barry Lyndon features he's in Leonard Rossiter, favourite Kubrick actor.
And well-known actor today.
But I knew Leonard Rossiter, obviously, for the reruns of The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin. The 1970s sitcom.
Of course.
Which was, is this meaning nothing to anyone?
No, it means a lot to me.
It does to him.
Chris is 12.
Imagine I'm 5.
And like all millennials, he likes to show off his ignorance.
Oh, it's happened. I've been outed as a millennial. On the cusp of... Just because I was cusping millennial, and also it would mean I'll get a new age rail card next year. Yeah, enjoy that, guys, when I'm rubbing it in your faces. Literally.
I just got married. We've got the two together rail card. We're saving everything.
Even the marriage.
It's tough doing stand-up because all I've got now... The good thing about having a wedding ring now is that I can wave the two together rail card and I give like a meaningful nod suggesting like my wife is in the toilet and the ticket man will take it. I'm just on my own to do a gig. Fuck you.
Oh, do you have to be together to use it?
Together, yeah.
Wow.
That's an interesting.
It's an interesting institutionalizing.
Tickets now, I think about it.
But it's another conspiracy, right? Like the moon landing, isn't it? It's another reason.
Thinking of ways out of it, I was thinking, maybe that's a scam. it isn't a good scam. It's a shit scam. I'm decompressing it at the end of a long night.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. And it's an interesting sort of social experiment to see a comedian who's just been on and off stage for over 3 hours to make him continue to talk afterwards. Continue to be entertaining. Now, quickly.
And this is about you as well.
It's all about you.
Are we going to do some McFly?
fucking
is that what it's like?
Is that where that song's from?
It's all about you, baby. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was an old.
I'm restraining myself. Sound like I can't sing right now.
Older and better song. No. It has the ring of a classic about it.
It does. Yeah, I think Gnarls Barkley did it once. The classic Gnarls Barkley.
Yeah. Or the king of 2005.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, back in those... I'm a millennial, you've got to remember, that's old for me now.
That's it, yeah. Mm-hmm. I find it weird. I find it weird when I see, like, young bar staff singing along to songs that I'm like, they're singing along like it's a classic. Like, the way that I'd sing along to songs that are from before I was born. Like, you know, Led Zeppelin, The Beatles... like classic soul numbers, and then when I see people now in their 20s singing along to a song, I think, I remember when that came out. Yeah. That makes me want to die.
And they're there on the bar going, I gotta get through this. You've realised that.
21 seconds ago, the old songs are best.
Can't beat them classics, eh?
I remember when almost none of them had a criminal record.
Almost none of them.
Financially solvent. I think even before they released some of the first singles, there've been a number of firearms charges.
So to keep you going, Mike, on a steam that isn't just your own genius. So where did your comedy career start? Tell me on these desert island podcasts.
Desert island podcasts. Well, Chris, the first podcast I'd like to choose on Desert Island Podcasts is the Backyard Comedy Podcast.
Good choice. That's a good choice podcast.
It's always been there for me. Comedy. Well, I have a strong memory. So early childhood things. So we've already covered. So Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin. That was. But I was about seven when I think my dad. I was very lucky in that. My dad has no interest in spending time with me during the school holidays because he was working. But he had his own business, so he worked from home. So what would happen was he would put on old cassettes of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that he'd recorded off the radio in 1978 and then go off and do some work and leave me listening to them playing with some Lego. And that would be like a day of the school holidays when I was a kid. Or then in the late 80s...
Sounds like a joyous day.
That sounds amazing. I would love it.
English countryside.
Here's some Lego. Here's Hitchhiker's Guide from the 70s on radio. I would do that now. That's my Bumble profile. The girl that will give me these things.
These were special and glorious times. And occasionally my dad would pop in and just go, you're all right. And then at lunchtime he'd make a cheese omelette or cheese on toast. And
then cheese-based items.
Any cheese-based items... from my dad will still claim to be the finest maker of a cheese omelette in the southeast.
Southeast.
Restrains himself.
Yeah, he's a regional cook. he would never. He's a humble man. He would never claim the national prize. But I mean, if you want a cheese omelette and you're in the Sussex area. Pop down, see my dad.
He has the modesty of only 10 men.
I mean, he'll be surprised if you turn up and say. All right, Derek. We heard there was eggs. We heard there was Ched.
Eggs and Ched. Is that how you say it down there?
Bang him in the pan, mate. Get him on the table. Let's listen to some Douglas Adams. So Douglas Adams, probably about 7 years old, and also
Douglas Adams only 7 years old.
Yeah, I know. He's a genius, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was great. He did it.
No, he was only. I mean, frustratingly, he was only in his 20s. He left Cambridge. As so many people do on completing a degree, but he worked with the pythons. So he worked with the pythons when he was still like 20, 23, 24.
Wow. Really? So, in what capacity though?
So he appears in the I think the fourth series of he appears in like small roles in the fourth.
Oh, so he wasn't with them in Cambridge.
No. So he was young, significantly younger than he was about 10 years younger than them. But he ended up writing additional material, I believe.
Wow.
And he has some sort of like minor extra roles in the possibly the final series of Monty Python's Flying Circus. And Monty Python's Flying Circus is what I also saw when I was about 7 years old. And I was the only kid in the playground trying to reenact the attack of the killer blancmanges or in a thinking that Freemasons were apparently funny.
There's a rather beautiful thing. At the Highgate Cemetery, where he's buried, there's a pot where people are... where people donate pens and pencils. And the Highgate Cemetery staff, they said they have to empty this massive pot like on a weekly basis, because so many people still go and pay homage to his... It's probably more popular than Karl Marx's grave in these climate...
I didn't know that. I will be donating all of those pens and pencils that I can't get rid of.
Losing pens and pencils all the time.
That's where they end up.
Well, it's a great place to go get free pens and pencils.
It feels like a donut.
But it does cost £3.
God, I tried to say that like it was an amusing idea that had struck me, but of course it's a bloody Douglas Adams bit, isn't it? It's the disappearing pens throughout the universe.
And then they appear in the pot by his grave, the creator of that idea. How very Douglas Adams of that moment. Maybe that's what he wanted the whole time.
Well, I don't think he's getting any advantage from it, but the staff of Highgate Cemetery are truly penned up.
Yeah. Well, I just hope that dead atheist is looking down on us now. Going, oh fuck, I was wrong as fuck.
Shit. Good job there's an area on in heaven for us. It's a nice penned off area. I feel like if heaven was going to accept atheists.
But like if God is a benevolent God, then the atheists area, it will kind of be basic like a travelogue.
Yes, but absolutely.
It won't be like hell.
Yeah. You don't get the Premier Inn.
Oh no, Premier Inn, heaven.
Yeah, absolute heaven. Best beds.
Holiday Inn is above Premier Inn, I'm afraid. And I'm afraid it goes, Holiday Inn is the top. Then it's Ibis, then Premier Inn, then it's Travel Lodge.
Ibis, then Premier Inn?
I don't think I've ever stayed anywhere nicer than the Premier Inn.
Yeah. Mate, you need to try a Holiday Inn.
And I have actually stayed in big-name hotels.
Holiday Inns give you a choice of different firmness of pillows, and you can just radio down for a toothbrush.
Radio? They give you radios?
Yeah, they give you radios.
You're going to the wrong hotels. Now they have phones.
None of the ones I go to. After Seminar Down.
This is David 2, concierge.
You can use a Holiday Inn with an oil rig.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Sorry. I'm always doing that.
This is David 2, Big Red. Big Red's please hand up a hooker. Big Red.
And if I could choose the firmness of pillows, if you know what I mean.
As you know, David, there is no famous pillow. Please fuck off. I let you choose, though.
Suddenly, choosing the firmness of pillows sounds so sinister. So sinister.
It's like a line from it's With Neil and I, where he's like, are you a stone or a sponge? What is your preferred firmness of pillow?
Are you the type of man who likes to choose the firmness of pillows?
And David Whitney, so yes, yes, you are that type of man.
Last night I dreamt I went to Mandalay again. I chose the firmness of my own pillows.
Maybe we shouldn't do these pods after the show.
Maybe.
Are you worried that this sounds like the ramblings of
three men? I mean, I'm not even drinking.
Three people with the same level of insanity.
So, major influences, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Douglas Adams.
Early. I mean, this is the thing.
Rising Damp.
Being not Rising Damp, no. I was never ITV, David.
Auntie was my only god.
Oh, my God. Rise and Fall of Reginald Perrin, I do remember seeing that as a kid. Monty Python, massive. Python, massive. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Massive, it's weird. It's weird when you're the only kid at school. I'm not saying it was good, but if someone asked you to write a story, I would write a story that was 15 pages long and involved parallel universes. And most people would they were phoning it in. I mean, at best, some of those kids in St Catherine's Primary School in Littlehampton were frankly phoning in their creative writing.
Yeah.
Barely, I mean, I was, sure, they could do long division, I couldn't, but I was still churning out the narrative, I was getting good lines down there.
But did they get you? Did they give you the grades to compare to what you were writing down?
Sometimes it was nice, actually, at primary school. I was actually just allowed... Because I was just allowed to sit in a corner and write a story for weeks at a time. Which was, I'm not sure you could get away with that now.
There was also a lot of kids in my school they let do that, but there was different reasons. Let him write a story in the corner, otherwise he gets mad.
And eat a crayon. The problem of being... I think the problem with me was I felt like I was clever, undeservedly so.
You feel like you weren't getting the adulation at the time, right? Of course.
This is it. I was disappointed that you know, at the age of 10, publishers send back polite letters, but they're just not coming up with the advances that I wanted on my work.
Well, it's nothing like now, where they just don't send you back letters, which is a lovely version of that.
They can't even bother to have a preset email to tell you to fuck off.
I love that. That's my favourite.
So those are like early kid, those are like pre-10. After the age of 10, big comedy influencer. Well, Blackadder, absolutely massive in my life, I think. That doesn't need to
goes without saying.
Without saying.
That's safe.
You'd be so surprised for a knob, Luke.
If you're having a desert island disc of comedy, that's your Shakespeare and the Bible. Actually, is probably
redundant. Blackadder and the.
That's Old Testament. That's established. Yeah. That's solid. That's rock bed. Mm. That's in there.
Well, maybe I don't know if you were doing desert island discs. The two, because obviously the thing that they, the reason why they had the Bible and the works of Shakespeare on desert island.
Is it would be boring if everybody said.
Everyone would feel that they had to say it, which I don't think they would now, but. Probably your comedy desert island discs should be like Bill Hicks and Monty Python. But Blackadder, definitely. Then the day to day.
Yes.
First time I saw Chris Morris.
That's New Testament. That was my New Testament.
But that was because I remember going upstairs as a kid because my dad had band practice. So my dad was carving out some prog rock shapes, playing the bass guitar with my Uncle Alan. And so I went upstairs.
Was Uncle Alan not always on another guitar, or was he...
He played lead.
He played lead.
And there was a guy called Peter who played drums. I don't think you can buy any of their material.
Not on iTunes?
It just exists on cassettes in my dad's house. But there we go.
So if you're looking to buy them...
I remember that, because I was then pushed upstairs to watch telly on my own while they had band practice downstairs. And that's sort of I think that's the best thing, is like your best influences as a kid are things that you sort of see by accident that you're probably not really allowed to watch, but your parents are doing something else and they just want you to fuck off.
That's why I'm majorly influenced by the Babe channel.
And also everything you said did not sound like how I think you intended. So it's something you're not meant to see and your parents definitely don't want you to see it, but it's something separately.
I'm still talking about a 4-channel world.
Okay, good. We're still in 4chan.
Even as a kid, obviously you'd try and stay up and catch a bit of tit on Channel 4.
A bit of blue. Channel 5 was a revolution. Post 9 o'clock, all blue.
I remember the first night of Channel 5. We were all very excited about it, but I lived on the south coast of England and it was in the summer. So if you remember... Is this just becoming television nostalgia?
The
thing that forced me out on the strip. Now I'm not an outdoors person really. I wouldn't go outside. But in as a kid in the summer, if it was sunny, we would get no TV reception. We get interference of French telly. So I'd try and watch an episode of The Bill, also a major influence on me as a kid. Love it. They're so tightly written. You go to YouTube now, watch an episode of The Bill, and tell me there is not strong characterization, motivation, and plot. That in 22 minutes, an episode of The Bill does more than any of your Anton Chekhovs do in 3.5 hours. All right. And
what's his name again?
Anton Chekhov. No, I like him. He's a funny man.
But he's no The Bill.
He's not The Bill.
Anton Chekhov. He's no The Bill.
How many plays did Anton Chekhov write?
He's not The Bill.
6 full-length ones and a handful of one-acts?
Yeah.
How many episodes of The Bill?
How many of The Bill were there?
Fucking hundreds.
50,000. How many of them were any of these in? I mean, we're all in about 3 of them, I'm sure.
I think it's commission for infinite. There's just no end to it.
There was, I mean, it's like the people that killed The Bill have no soul.
No.
We just...
And also didn't do the last episode properly. Like, yeah. One of my dreams is to write the last episode of something that's been going on that long, like EastEnders or Coronation Street, and then do something like, it turns out they were all it robots. Was all it was like Westworld. They were just... I wouldn't dream it, because that's been done. Yeah. I would full on, like, it's Westworld. There were robots, and these... This like, is... Phil Mitchell was actually a person on tour in that world, and this is... I'd the, make it unravel, just do, to destroy...
You know, the police station in the bill is actually in space, and just like space, you can't comprehend the fact that it's curved. But if a policeman went out one door, he immediately came out the other door behind you. Mm. You didn't realise the full curvature of the situation.
That's why you'd see them hanging in the background.
1983 to, like, 2010. And, like, again, if they had just seamlessly done it so that something... That Jim Carver, who was at Jim Carver's bill, it all loops round that he walks out of the last episode of the bill.
If they're just like Princess Leia, just
it's all cyclical, and it will all happen. It is inevitable.
So yeah, how? And in 50 years, they'll say how it's a comment on time. Sorry, go on.
That's all right. It's moment past.
That's good, isn't it? The moment always passes.
Yeah.
Much like the bill.
We're powerless.
So I was going to ask as well. So you're very, like, a lot of... You're very political as well as a comedian sometimes, and you are very astute.
Very political sometimes.
Sometimes you choose politics, sometimes you put it down in your pocket. You can pull that gun out when you need to. But you're very astute in your politics, when it comes to comedy especially, as you were on our previous episode, May or May Not, our election special.
The live election special. That we've released...
Literally the next day. I got really drunk with you guys, and then the next morning got up super early, edited it as quick as possible, and got it straight out.
And you prophesied that there would be a Tory DUP coalition.
I absolutely did. I got it 100% right. Yeah. I don't want to say that I'm some kind of Nostradamus figure. I don't want to say that I'm some kind of...
God
to you people.
To you people. What do you mean?
To little people.
It was the only thing that could have... I mean, it's a desperate last-ditch act of a...
I love the fact that this government doesn't even... Because when it was the Tory Lib Dems, the Tory party kept on hiding behind calling it a coalition when it blatantly wasn't, because the Liberal Democrats had absolutely no power in the situation whatsoever.
They all blamed them.
Yeah, which was the worst thing in the world. So unfair.
We were all the playground bullies. Like, I mean, I would never vote Lib Dem because I actually, you know, have opinions. But other people who would consider themselves Lib Dem voters and then didn't vote Lib Dem and really punished the Lib Dems at the last election, they should feel really shit about themselves. Because that was like the act of a playground bully, just kind of headlocking.
Nick Clegg and just rattling him on the skull.
Nick Clegg, Tim, you know. We went from Clegg mania to paranoia very quickly. admittedly, he said some things that he should have known. Well, that some there should have been enough filter to say, don't mention gays, Tim. Have your faith, that's fine. Let's not. We haven't got enough as a third party. We don't have room for nuance.
Wait, is that another double entendre there? No nuances, right?
Another great 70s sitcom that influenced me as a kid. We don't have room for nuance.
I think it was spelt different. My pronunciation may be off. So, like, what drove you though in that direction? What ignited your political passion?
It was one of that sounds like the noise of a seal would make.
Can often hear it at Prime Minister's Question Time, to be honest.
If I'm honest, I was a prick kid. And it's one of those things, when you're a prick kid, you get into politics and it makes you feel grown up and you say all those things. And then you end up being a grown up and you're like, oh, I've still got opinions. I've remembered. It's the same as if you were a lifelong, you know, I mean, God, you know, God knows why would you be, but like if you're a West Ham fan or something like that, you're like, oh, I've remembered all these names now and all these things that we've done and won these. We won trophies, and I remember who played at left back in 1996. Like, politics is like that, really, isn't it? It's like, if you junk it, if you walk away and say, that's just bollocks, none of this means anything and nothing ever changes, you're like, well, how do I still know Geoffrey Howe or the Westland helicopter affair? Like, what's the point in me having that in my head if all this is meaningless? Why have I been carrying this with me?
It's, you know? When things become important to you at that age, though, they do imprint on you, and they do make... I was in a text conversation with somebody earlier in the week, and they said something disparaging about the 80s and America, and said, hey, in the 80s, America was the promised land. It had all of the best things. It had Richard Pryor, the New York Giants, the Ghostbusters, and the film Cocktail. And then I realised, oh my God, that list explains me. you've just got to add with Nail and I and Shakespeare, yeah, and I'm done. That's if anybody needs to play me,
Shakespeare, that famous bard from the 80s.
Soundtrack album. That's it, and then that's you. Yeah. And then that actually is just the interior of your mind.
Yeah,
that is a man created. I think one of the weird things, like growing up in the southeast of England, and one of my constant bugbears still is that people imagine that the southeast is wall to wall horse riding, cigar chomping, gilet wearing, checked shirt, country house dwelling, wine bar denizens.
And it is.
Eating raw antiques for breakfast. And it is. I grew up in the southeast of England in a rundown south coast town. And look, I grew up. Look, there are working class people in the southeast of England, and there are people having a shit time in the south.
Thank Christ.
Yeah. And that I think that was important, because I grew up in the Thatcher thing.
Yeah.
That's a it's bland and probably obvious to say it, but like, not everyone in the south was having a great time under Thatcher.
You're from one of those people. Seaside towns where the donkeys left first.
Yes.
Because they had better work to go and do.
Couldn't get any work down a mine anymore, could they?
Or on the beach. No, at least they were versatile.
The donkeys actually bought their own houses in Spain.
Yeah.
When the markets crashed, threw themselves out of those church towers. So, there are always different perspectives, guys. I guess that's what I'm saying.
No one ever talks of the donkeys.
Ninety-four
donkeys.
When the recession hit in '94, a lot of donkeys on the Costa del Sol just like.
Hence this, our Donkey Memorial podcast.
I can't go back to my family now. I can't explain the debts.
I can't return to Dorset with this tattoo.
In Dorset, no.
So that's a brief, I say brief, you know, overture of your life. So what have you got coming up, Mike? Tell us.
Oh, what's in the pipeline?
What's in the pipeline for Mike?
That is a very exciting.
What's in Mike's pipeline?
Talk about. I've got some tremendous gigs going up and down the country. I'll be up in Newcastle next week.
The Stand?
The Cumberland. The Stand is passé now, mate. It's all about Ouseburn. If you're in Newcastle, the Ouseburn pubs, that's where it's hot and sexy. I had planned to write a whole new raft of material right up until the point that I just lost my latest notebook. So I'll be starting.
It was very funny you said tonight about losing that notebook.
Yeah, I'm hoping that.
Because for me, it sounds so ridiculous to be. I don't mean that it is ridiculous, but it sounds. As a dyslexic who writing in a notebook really is just a memory exercise of writing, because if I think of something that's funny, the actual act of writing it will lodge it further in my head. I never actually go back to a notebook to try and read it.
Well, my notebooks are terrible things. They're terrible, spidery things filled with, like, I try and write bullet points of what a bit will look like, of what a routine will look like. I try and do bullet points of the routine I'm going to do. If I'm like, oh, you're going to do 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever, like, I try and do the bullet points of what that's going to be. And I start, if I'm sitting on the train, I start spidering around it and, like, trying to write added little bits in it. And they do look awful if you open them. I mean, good luck to anyone who finds a lost notebook. But I do read it. I have terrible... like, I am the opposite of you, David. I have a terrible time remembering material. And that one of the worst things that happens to me is, especially when people... When good friends of mine that I respect come up to me and say, why don't you do that bit anymore? That is hilarious. And I say, I cannot even remember what you're talking about. That is my greatest fear as a comic, is that I cannot remember half the things that I say that are funny. And the things that I then go back to are things that I can remember and possibly aren't even that funny.
And you think you left this notebook in the lavatory of a of an airplane?
VS-90.
What had you thought of while having a shit that you felt that you needed to write down?
So I was trying to comment. I was trying to be clever.
Oh my God, these bags of nuts really are small. Right.
So I left my honeymoon. It was the end of honeymoon. And of course, I was wearing a short sleeve shirt, some shorts, and some sandals because I'd gone to a honeymoon in
a hot place.
Norway. No. we were in St. Lucia, and so you get on the airport, and I'm wearing my little summery clothes. I'm looking like a lovely little boy. wearing his summer clothes, wearing a little shirt.
Like a 1940s boy on holiday.
Little shorts.
Socks up TV.
I'm wearing sandals. I know what it's like. I've done it. It happened to me before. I remember being 18 and coming back from like a sixth form sort of. We went on a post A levels trip to Crete, and it was, you know, exactly what 18-year-olds drinking do. But I remember coming back from that like wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and then turning up in like the north terminal of Gatwick Airport, like cold and afraid and lonely and not wearing enough clothes, feeling the shame of like, because what happens when you get on a plane, you're like, yeah, more drinking, the holiday's still on.
And you arrive.
You arrive and you're cold and you're lonely and you haven't slept for a long time.
So you went to get changed. You went to go and put on your parker coat.
Yeah.
Duffel coat.
Clothes that I actually feel comfortable in.
Okay.
And then waistcoat.
A monocle.
Watch. Two monocles.
Cattle prod for the homeless.
Yeah. That's it. And I was getting changed, and it had been a turbulent ride. So essentially, the toilet in this Airbus, as I believe it was like four separate people had puked into a cocktail shaker, and then I had to get in it to change my trousers. And I think I put my notebook down there.
Yeah, never mind.
So
I hope
again at some point you will be watching Britain's Got Talent and see a deeply hilarious air stewardess. Who will inexplicably have a lot of material about what it's like to be a bearded, overweight man in his 30s.
Perfect. Michael and I are both in a feature film, which is premiering in London's West End at the end of November. There are tickets still available. There's a second screening. The first screening sold out in an hour, could you believe? But there is other screenings. You can get tickets from guardiansfilm.co.uk. That's guardiansfilm.co.uk. There's a trailer on there. Michael and I are both in that movie. And do come along and see us in it. Chris is going to host the Q&A afterwards.
I will be hosting the Q&A. So, I have questions to come up with, and I also have questions I need answered. For instance, where did my sunglasses go?
You probably sat on them. That's always the answer.
See, I knew you guys. Yeah,
Michael's on it.
Michael's on it. That's just the start. It's going to go in depth about things I'm not sure about in my general life. Why is it sometimes sticky? Nothing's happened.
Are we talking about the atmosphere or your?
Well, you'll have to wait till the Q&A.
Okay, good. Sometimes it is sticky.
And I like how Michael's already got his prepped, I'm thinking about what the ask could be face.
I imagine there'll just be a lot of fuck, marry, kill.
Thank you so much for coming on, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
If you weren't one of the 120 people here tonight for the show, do come and join us. This month has been amazing. We've had Alan Carr here. We've had Joe Brand here. On the 11th of November... We've had Harry Hill on the 11th of November. Lee Hurst himself, the owner of this club, is doing a solo show. Come down for that. That's the 11th of November. All these gigs are on the Backyard Comedy Club .co.uk, but do check out the film guardiansfilm.co.uk. Any last words, Chris, before I shoot you
in the fucking face? Can I have a steak? No, that's me for tonight. Thank you very much for joining us, audience, and from you, Michael.
Thank you, team.
Yeah.